If you've ever dealt with a behavioral pattern that just won't quit, you know the feeling. Maybe it's a child struggling with organization, or even just, you know, an employee who's chronically late. Mm-hmm. It's that persistent problem. And if you're the one in charge of the solution, you very quickly start to feel like an external engine. You're doing all the work, the nagging, the reminding, the planning.
And it is exhausting for everyone involved. The second we become that external motivation for someone, we create this this dynamic of dependence. The person never really internalizes how to change.
So the minute you walk away, the behavior just snaps right back.
It reverts, exactly.
Yeah.
So what we've pulled from the source material for today is this, well, it's a really profound shift in focus.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about transferring responsibility to the child.
Okay, that phrase, transferring responsibility, I think for some people it can sound a little harsh. You know, like you're just abandoning them and saying, figure it out yourself, I'm done.
Yeah, and that is absolutely not what it is. That's the key distinction. This isn't about abandonment. It's about moving past just demanding compliance. It's active training. It's designed to empower the child to take ownership of the solution.
I really like that framing. It shifts the goal from just, you know, make the behavior stop, to help the child build a life skill. And the specific strategy we're diving into today gives you a blueprint for that.
That's right. Our mission here is to unpack a really practical written tool called the T-chart technique. It is the mechanism that shifts the burden of planning from the parent to the child.
So if you're listening, you're going to get a concrete plan for helping someone in your life move from, say, point A, this persistent challenge, to point B.
To maturity, to self-management. And the power here is that it forces the young person to stop externalizing, you know, to stop saying, oh, if my brother would just stop teasing me, or if my mom would just remember my binder.
And instead, they have to think really practically about what they need to do differently.
Okay, so let's unpack that core challenge first. This tension that gets created by dependence.
Right.
In a family, if the parent is the one always reminding kids about homework, chores, getting ready, the parent has basically become the kid's brain, their external planner.
Exactly. And that dynamic just, it ratchets up the tension. Parents feel disrespected because they've said it four times, and the child feels incompetent or, you know, resentful because they're always being nagged.
The young person just learns to wait for that external cue.
Yes, which prevents them from ever developing real self-management skills.
So if the goal is to replace that dependence with self-management, what are the signs we're on the right track? According to the sources, what does maturity actually look like?
There are a few key indicators. First, the child learns to report back. They close that communication loop without you having to chase them down. Second, and this is huge, they start taking initiative.
They see what needs to be done and just do it without being asked, without being told. It's massive.
Mm-hmm.
But the sources are also really clear that the ultimate goal isn't just sort of total self-reliance. That can look like arrogance.
Right. It's not about isolation.
Not at all. We're not aiming for isolation. The goal is interdependence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a careful balance. It's the ability to manage yourself and work cooperatively, humbly with other people.
So my organization isn't just for me. It serves the whole family, for the whole team.
Yes, that's it. It's that move from what do I want to how can I contribute? Well, it reflects that that fundamental principle of empathy.
Now, when conflict comes up, which is usually the moment a parent realizes their kid doesn't have a plan, the source material has this three-question process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's designed to stop the excuses and immediately transfer that responsibility back. What are those questions?
They're designed to gently corner the child into accountability. First, you ask, what did you do wrong?
Okay, so that immediately blocks the, well, he started it, defense.
Completely. They have to identify their personal failure first. Second, you ask, why was that wrong? Now you're moving from just behavior into principle. It forces them to connect their action to a consequence.
This is the third one.
The third question is the most important for our deep dive today. What are you going to do differently next time?
And that's where the cheat chart is born, because often the answer is, I don't know. They don't have a plan.
Precisely. If they can't answer that third question with specific steps, they've only confessed the problem. They haven't taken responsibility for the solution.
That pivot you just described, it sets the stage perfectly for the T-chart. We've established the child needs a plan, but it can't just be a vague idea like, I'll be nicer.
It cannot. The T-chart is the tool that makes the abstract concrete. It's a real written action plan that is developed by the child for their specific challenge.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. The sources cite this great story of a 10-year-old baseball pitcher, Daniel. He had a terrible anger problem on the mound. An umpire makes a bad call and he just erupts. Gets pulled from the game.
A super common scenario in youth sports, all that pressure.
Right. So Daniel needed a plan. He worked on his own self-management steps, his Daniel plan. Mm. And the change was fast because he had these specific things he was responsible for doing. It was so profound. He started telling other kids on his team, you need to go see Dr. Taransky. You need to go see Dr. Taransky.
Because it was his, he owned it.
He owned it completely.
Okay, so let's use the generic example, Billy's anger management plan, to really visualize the structure. It's a T, which divides the paper into two main columns. What are they?
The columns are DO and SEIA. The DO column is for the external observable stuff, the actions they'll take or the exact words that will come out of their mouth, like, I will take three deep breaths, or I will turn and walk toward the fence.
Okay, that seems pretty straightforward. It covers the visible change. But the essay column, what is said inside the heart, that feels like where the real work happens.
Absolutely. The door column gets you compliance. The say column gets you resilience. It's the difference between temporary obedience and lasting character change. This is for the internal self-talk.
So instead of Billy just walking away but still fuming inside, what would he write in the say column?
He might write something like, I'll remind myself this game isn't life or death. Or maybe I will say to myself, I am not going to let this feeling control me.
That is a powerful distinction, because managing the behavior is only half the battle. If the internal dialogue is still destructive, the behavior is going to follow eventually.
Right. The say column is where the child is actively creating a new internal script for themselves. And that script is vital. The sources suggest aiming for five things to start, five things the child will do or say. If there are, you know, attentional challenges, you can reduce that to three to make it more manageable.
Okay, but when a parent sits down and says, great, write five things you'll do when you get angry, I can just hear the most common response in the world.
I don't know.
I don't know what to write. Exactly. So that's where the chart gets a little more complex, right? It's not just a T.
You're touching on the ideas column, which is so critical. The T chart has the two columns the child writes in, do and say, but you often need a third space, the ideas column. This is the brainstorming zone.
So that's where parents or siblings or a coach can offer suggestions.
Exactly. But there's a boundary. And this brings us to the single most critical, non-negotiable rule of the T chart. It's the ownership rule.
Okay.
Parents can write on the ideas side. They can suggest things like, you could walk away, or you could remember the consequence you want to avoid. But the child must be the one to write the actual plan, the do and say side.
Why is that transfer of the pen so important?
Because if the parent dictates it, or worse, makes the classic mistake of just writing it for them and sticking on the fridge.
Which is just external enforcement again.
The child keeps the right to dismiss it. They could look at that chart and say, that's not going to work for me. You don't understand. They have zero vested interest.
But when they write it themselves.
Even if they just copied your ideas from the other column, it now belongs to them. They can't argue with their own handwriting. It fosters this genuine sense of empowerment.
The sources have this fantastic little anecdote about a 9-year-old girl that just illustrates this perfectly.
Yes. This girl struggled with some intense disrespect, and she came into a session carrying a little purse. When asked why she needed it, she pulls out this piece of paper. It was a raggedy yellow piece of paper, all folded and worn.
And it was her plan.
It was her plan. It had started with 5 points, but over the weeks, she'd added to it. It had grown to 12 points. She carried it everywhere because it was her strategy. That right there is the embodiment of self-management and ownership.
That empowerment, that feeling of having control over your own response, it connects to this universal principle that the materials cite.
Exactly. We all face temptation. We all face pressure. The promise in the source material is that for every pressure, there is a way of escape that lets you endure it. The T chart is the concrete personal application of that way out. It lets the child stay in the tough situation and deal with it instead of just reacting or running away.
So we have this plan. The child owns it. It's written down. Is it set in stone now, or is this a flexible thing?
Oh, it's absolutely a working document. 5 things are almost never enough forever. As the child matures, they'll encounter new situations. Maybe they master anger at home, but now they're struggling with friends at school.
So they realize they need a new step.
They learn and they add. And that flexibility is crucial. It takes the pressure off. It's okay if they try something from the do column and it doesn't work in a new context.
That's just part of the learning process.
It is. They learn from it, they cross it off, they add a better solution. And this method can be used for any problem. Disrespect, organization, sibling conflict. It's a methodology for creating custom self-management systems.
It sounds like it also requires a bit of humility from the child, a willingness to admit, I don't have all the answers here.
It does. Humility grows when we realize there are things we don't know that we don't know. When someone's struggling, they often feel trapped by their current set of solutions, which aren't working. This willingness to seek a new plan, that's when the light bulbs turn on.
The sources use a really powerful analogy for this, the impossible cut activity. Can you walk us through that?
The impossible cut is a physical puzzle. You take a specially pre-cut piece of paper, you fold it a certain way, and then you rotate it 180 degrees. And it looks physically impossible to cut it into two pieces.
And people try to just muscle through it.
They try to muscle through it, they cut it violently, they give up. They are trapped by what their eyes can see in that moment.
So what's the revelation?
The revelation comes when they realize they need a vision for something bigger than the immediate reality. It's like those moments in life when we feel totally trapped. The sources compare it to the Israelites at the Red Sea. All they could see were walls of water and an army, an impossible situation.
Right.
The moment they get the vision for the path forward, the impossible becomes possible. That aha moment of solving the puzzle. That's the same feeling a child has when they realize their T-chart is working, that they can handle something they thought was insurmountable.
So, after all this, what does it all mean for you, the listener? We started this deep dive talking about ending that cycle of nagging.
It means we've laid out the tools to build a strategy. And remember, strategy is the big picture, reaching the child's heart, fostering maturity. The T-chart is the powerful technique that fits inside that strategy. We're aiming for self-management, not just surface-level compliance.
I think the key takeaway is the power of specificity. Forcing the child to name the specific how-tos, the things they will do and the things they will say, gives them actual tools.
Actionable tools. And we foster internal motivation and give them a plan for success that is 100% owned by them.
The responsibility is transferred, but the support is still there.
And the result is a huge boost in that child's confidence and their competence.
So since this whole T-chart idea is about gaining control over your responses by using specific do's and says, we want to leave you with a final thought. If you were to adopt this for yourself, if you made your own personal T-chart for a common adult challenge like managing frustration or resisting procrastination, where's the area in your life that requires your raggedy yellow piece of paper? Something to think about until the next deep dive.